Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go, hook him up!
Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm joined by my co-host, Katrina. What's going on, Katrina?
Not much. What's going on?
Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot. And we got our other co-host on the line, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Living the dream. How's it going, fellas?
It's going all right. Now, can you explain to us why we're doing the show 2 hours early?
I've got stuff to do, brother. It's the weekend.
He has a lot.
He has to do chores for the old lady.
Yeah, that's the way it rolls in my house.
Yeah. I know it does.
Yeah. Well, at least my wife will take my last name.
Right?
I would hope so.
I thought Whitney was super cool, but now I think she's anti-Mexican.
Especially with her real last name.
The
right? What? Especially with her last name, you'd think she'd want a new one.
That's what I would think. But hey, who are we to judge?
Right. Cool.
I keep the name. I will go with the name I can pronounce.
Yeah, Smith. Meet in the middle.
Is that why your wedding never happened, Couture? She didn't want to take your last name?
No, those are for reasons that will never be discussed.
Oh, I think we should dig deeper, actually.
Actually, every time he gets drunk, when you know during the week, he's more than happy to talk about it. But then when the show starts, he gets real hush hush about it.
Well, I don't drink much anymore. Let's go on with the show.
Well, you know, we're like trying to lighten up the at least the beginning of the show, since we do have a serious topic to discuss this week.
Yeah,
the topic's so serious and. Controversy that one of our most dedicated listeners will not be listening to the show just because of what it's about.
Right.
So if anyone's offended by what we're going to talk, I know Robert's going to be the first one posting or something, because he posted something a while back about when are we going to do a Benoit show. Well, we're doing the Benoit show now, Robert, so go ahead and bitch on the board or whatever. But anyway, we're going to talk about Chris Benoit. Craig wanted to talk about Chris Benoit, which is that was pretty controversy, idea. But then, of course, he kind of chickens out and he's talking, oh, we'll pick his top five matches. And it's like, we got so much stuff we could talk about, and Craig wants to talk about his top five matches. But we'll talk about some of his top five matches, but we got to talk about everything, you know. We got to talk about the good and the bad here, so.
Yeah, and it is the sad anniversary of Chris Benoit's death. Of course, with that, it's also the death of his son and his wife. And that's why people are leery of it, because, you know, of course, Chris Benoit murdered his family before he committed suicide. And it's a sad thing, and obviously I don't think the guy was in his right mind when he did it, and, you know, people are angry about it and still upset about it, and I totally get that. So I would hope that we would broach the subject with, you know, somewhat professionalism and try to treat it as such, treat it serious.
Okay, well, here's a good way to start off. How about you guys talk about, obviously you both remember when you heard the news, so, you know, why don't y'all talk about that?
Mm-hmm. Ed,
you go first.
About when we heard the news?
Yes.
Okay, well, besides being the five-year anniversary, it's basically also the five-year anniversary of the first kind of, I guess, it wasn't a convention, but the first F4W convention where the weekend that all this is going on, I was having the time of my life, a very documented and pictured and audio time with crazy little buddy Brian and Benny and Brian Fritz and Mike Sawyer and the guy from Australia. And we had a great time while this was going on. So I came home Monday. I got home Sunday, really late Sunday night. I had to do the paper out. I got home. I really couldn't fall asleep. It took me a while. So when I finally did fall asleep, I basically had my alarm set for 8 o'clock so I could watch Raw. And I woke up. When my alarm went off a couple minutes earlier, I went to the TV, I turned on Raw, and Raw is basically they're doing an Eddie Guerrero tribute show, but with Rick Benoit instead, and of course I pretty much ran to my computer, got on the site, trying to find out what the fuck was going on, you know what I mean? What happened? And I was very upset about it. You know, we didn't know exactly what happened. We knew they were, by this point, we knew they were all dead, but we still didn't know that he had killed them. So I'm thinking, you know, maybe somebody broke into their house and killed them, or that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, you know what I mean? It was like a house invasion or something happened and someone killed them. That's the only thing I could think of. It didn't cross my mind that, you know, he had killed them and killed himself. I mean,
you're thinking of the best case scenario, right?
Yeah, I was hoping for it. I mean, even though it sucks because they're dead, I mean, it was like I couldn't fathom that that's what happened. You know what I mean? It's just until like later on, the next day, you know, you finally realize what's happening, and you know, you see plans on CNBC with Nancy Grace and getting into an argument with Finley, and I mean, I just couldn't believe what happened. And then the next night there in San Antonio, I had to go to a SmackDown taping, and basically was giving Brian live play-by-play of everything, and that was a trip because, you know, the general public still hadn't really heard what had happened, because there were like Benoit fans everywhere when the show started. You know, they were everywhere, and then slowly but surely they started kind of like fading away. Like I guess a bunch of them probably got confiscated and probably like word of mouth, you know, probably spread. So by the end, you didn't really see any. But I mean, you know, it was. I remember sitting next to this little kid who couldn't have been more than 7, 8 years old. And he had a Chris Benoit sign because he was, you know, sad that Chris Benoit died, and he was like trying like to talk to me, and I was just trying to be kind of quiet about it, and the kid's like talking about him having killed himself, and he's like he mentioned to me the kid actually goes to me that the pressure must have got to him, and I was kind of thinking, yeah, you know, I guess so, and then he kind of. Of course, he's a little kid. He said, yeah, the pressure of being on ECW now instead of like Raw, or, you know, something story-related or something like that. This is like, I just didn't say anything. I didn't want to break this kid's heart, tell him, you know, what actually happened. But, yeah, it was a really weird, numbing time.
Craig?
I was at work. I can't remember the time of the morning, but one of my coworkers had a satellite radio, and he had heard Test call in and said that Chris Benoit was dead. I don't remember what show he was listening to. I don't remember what show he was listening to. It might have been Man Cow or one of those shows. And he ran over and he said, Chris Benoit is dead in his house. And I'm like, what? And I was like, no. And I picked up the phone and I called Brian immediately. And Brian like, what? And he had heard nothing. And he starts getting on the internet. And I can hear him typing away. And he said, I'll call you back in a minute. And he calls back and a couple minutes later and said, yeah, he's gone. And I was, wow, what do you mean? And because we had met the guy. Brian and I had met the guy. And he was a reader of Brian's newsletter. Brian has gotten a couple of gifts from him. Just seemed like a normal, awesome dude. And as news trickled in, as he was, you know, talking to me, he tells me his wife and his son are dead too. And my mind immediately went to, I wonder if it was Kevin Sullivan. I don't think I'm the only one that might have thought that, but just really in a weird place because we, like I said, we had met him. I had sat across a table from him at one point. Just really strange. And I had posted on the board that day that, you know, I had lost a hero because he was an inspirational wrestler. He was an amazing wrestler. And as I look back now, there's a lot of things I'd like to take back in my life. That would be another one of them. And, you know, knowing how everything ended, and it had to have been really weird for Brian because he was, of course, closer to him than, you know, a lot of people, a lot of, you know, the guys on the board and stuff like that. And even myself, you know, I only, you know, shared a couple of times with him, but, you know, he kept in contact with Brian pretty regularly. And anyway, yeah, it was a really weird day. And then to find out later that he had done all the atrocities, and he had done all the violence. It makes you question, you know, people in general and what's going through their head.
For me,
how about you?
I had gotten home, I think it was over my sister's. I got home about 2:30, because 2:30 is usually the days I start checking the internet, because that's when all the news starts trickling in. It was Monday, so you know, there was always some news going on there. And it was weird, because you remember the day before that, what was the Night of Champions pay-per-view? He was supposed to wrestle CM Punk for the ECW title.
Yeah, and he no-showed.
Yeah, and it was weird, because it just kind of out of the blue, it said, substituting for Chris Benoit, that's kind of weird. You'd think there'd been more to it, and really, not much was reported on it. I think they said that maybe his family had food poisoning or something like that, and that was reported or something. And I said, that's strange. So anyway, the next day I get home about 2:30 and check the internet and just saw the headline, and just like my stomach dropped when I read that. I just, you know, it's just like takes a wind out of your sails. And you know, just looking at some of the details, and I'm not trying to say that like I know anything more, but I'm really into like crime shows and, you know, dramas and TV and, you know, like documentaries and stuff like that. And see three people dead in the house, kind of the first thing I think is murder-suicide.
Sure.
And I know everybody was going with the quote-unquote best possible scenario, which it wasn't, but they said, but, you know, was it home invasion or carbon monoxide or something like that, you know. And I don't know, I said it's probably going to get worse before it gets better, and I just had kind of an inkling about it. I mean, just when I hear those details, like just anything, you know, like on the news or anything, details like that kind of sticks out to me, like murder, suicide, or something like that, because people do that, so.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it was like halfway through the Raw show, you know, the news started coming in that they are not, like, pursuing any suspects or anything like that. And I guess, he killed his wife, Nancy, strangled her, and I guess he did the same to his son, and then he went down to, like, the basement. He had, like, a lat pull-down machine and hung himself with that or something. It was, like, really just a macabre thing. And I just remember, like, the details of, I think it was, like, maybe, you know, he'd been in contact with, like, Chavo Guerrero or something, and they were gotten worried about him, and they didn't call the police, and I think it was just, like, a little suburb in Atlanta. And they had sent the police out there to do a welfare check, and they couldn't get in because of the dogs. And then one of his neighbors who's been over there was able to get in, and I think she ran out screaming. So, just, and then after the day after, you couldn't escape it. I mean, you couldn't get away from it. I mean, it was the biggest, it was like way bigger than Owen Hart. Owen Hart was pretty big at the time. Just the worst thing that's ever happened. Hopefully that's the peak of the weirdness and like something happening in professional wrestling, because I don't think it gets any worse than that.
I remember that like for the longest time that was like the record for the board as far as people on the board at one time was, I guess basically when everyone the news broke that all that had happened.
Yeah, it was bigger than WrestleMania weekend or something a bit.
Yeah, I mean, people who, that, like at work who weren't even interested or whatever, someone asked me about it. And, you know, it's kind of hard to explain. I mean, it's something you can't, I didn't know the guy, I never met the guy, but I watched that DVD, you know. So up to that point, I'm thinking, besides being, you know, one of my favorite wrestlers in the ring, I'm like, you know, that was an awesome DVD. I mean, it was a DVD that if you didn't know Chris Benoit, that, you know, you didn't have to be a wrestling fan to watch that DVD and to like Chris Benoit, because the way he came off on the DVD. You know, of course, this is before everything that happened, you know. And there's always other sides to other people, and, you know, you only see what the camera sees. So, you know, those what Chris Benoit was really like. But, I mean, it's just, you know, you watch that DVD. He was someone that I just pulled for. I mean, you know, he's somebody who was super short, you know, that was never really supposed to make it in the business. And then just because he was so damn good that he did and stuff. And he's like, I knew he did it, but it was just hard to, like, you know, it's like, why? How did he do this? I mean, the only thing I can think about is that he just snapped and just lost his freaking mind. You know what I mean? One day he went from being a normal person to something went wrong in his brain. I mean, this is something, like, as bad as it was, I mean, it's like, how could anyone do that? I mean, it's like something, that's the only explanation I could ever give, is just something went wrong, and the dude just lost his mind, and just, it unfortunately ended the way it did.
Yeah, and they, like, you're never going to know exactly what happened. It's just, you know, you can speculate, like, through, like, tests and stuff like that, like they've done on your brain, so, but nobody's ever going to really know the truth, so.
Well, it got really put into perspective for me, you know, years later when my friend Adam Firestorm committed suicide, and he was the most happy-go-lucky guy in the world, and he was such a great dude, and later figured out that it was because of concussions and stuff like that that he killed himself. I'm sorry. So it put it into perspective for me that he wasn't in his right mind because of all the concussions that he's had with Adam, and you're talking, Adam had been wrestling indies for maybe 11 years, and the last huge concussion that he had, it was, you know, just like months before when he was coming home from a show in Canada and they hit a moose and the thing came through the windshield and it beat him up pretty good, and he had another concussion, and whatever set him off, you know, I know he was having problems with his wife and things like that, but I never thought that Adam would take himself out like that. And to know Adam and been around him, and, you know, didn't know the guy in his private life, and who does know another person in their private life, but I just couldn't imagine him killing himself. It just, that was so far out of my realm of thinking, because I knew the guy. And from what I knew of Chris Benoit, watching him on TV and actually have, you know, met him briefly a couple times, it didn't make sense. But then when Adam committed suicide, and then later, you know, coming to find out, you know, it might have been because of the concussions that he had had, it made sense to me. And I don't know if it's a good enough excuse to excuse his actions, because he basically had brain damage. I don't know, but I understand.
Yeah,
It's not like it's an isolated thing that just happened with Adam. I mean, look at all the football players that are committing suicide. You know, Junior Seau just did it. I mean, it's and then like who else? Like Mike Awesome, a few other wrestlers who've committed suicide because they've had, you know, for having a bunch of concussions or, you know, traumatic stuff like
brain.
That. When you get your brain rattled like that, I guess it causes something and causes, like, depression or whatever, and it causes them to do extreme, extreme things. And unfortunately, he just didn't kill himself. He took his family with him, which makes it worse. You know,
if he had been on the road, or his family was out of town, we might be having a different conversation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't know. Like, from what I've read about it, it seemed like it was building, like his paranoia. You hear, like, about he would take different ways. He'd go home in different ways, like, almost every time. And it was, like, a slow build. And it's, like, it was... The thing is, if someone probably would have noticed, he probably could have got help. But, you know, no one probably just... You know, it was just probably one of the things that got... through the cracks, but I mean, there was something building in his brain, and it finally just got to the point where it just snapped.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, when they did the, you know, they studied his brain, they say he had like the brain of an 80-year-old Alzheimer's patient. And that mm-hmm. always sounded weird to me, because how's he able to get around, you know, make all these towns, make arrangements to get on planes and rental cars and stuff if he's got that kind of a damage to his brain? I mean, I don't know.
Well, my granddad's in not good health, and he's in a rest home right now, and he's actually coming home fairly soon, but you know, he swears the last time I was over there, he swears that I was outside smoking and asked me to please to stop smoking, and the only thing I could do was say, okay, Grandpa, I'll stop smoking. The mind is weird. He thinks he's absolutely coherent. He thinks he's absolutely saying things that are rational and wise, but he honestly just doesn't know any better. And I would imagine it was the same way with Chris's traumatic brain injury, and he thinks everything's fine, and maybe he didn't, you know, maybe he didn't even know what he had done.
Yeah, I just think that something just, I don't know, short circuits in your head or something like that. I don't know. It's just
exactly
one of those impossible things that you're never going to really know. You think you know, but, you know, nobody does.
Right.
And the guy we talked about, this, you know, of all the ways to go out, I mean, like just not with Benoit, but like other people, committing suicide, that's like the worst thing that can happen to like family or something like that. I mean, I'm sure we've all, obviously you've known somebody, I'm sure we've all known somebody or known somebody that knows somebody that killed themselves or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
That's the worst thing in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But at least, you know, at least it's actually, this is probably the one thing, like when Eddie died, people thought that was kind of changed the business, and they kind of started wellness, but, I mean, it was after Benoit when they actually started taking it serious, like, since this last pay-per-view, you know, Del Rio didn't wrestle. I mean, I remember not that long ago when Kurt Angle smashed his head, got a concussion, I'm sure got examined. They knew he had a concussion, and they still let him go back out and do a match, concussed, looking like he didn't know where the hell he was at. So, I mean, at least there's some positive that they're at least trying to make an effort and, you know, trying to, you know, keep them from doing more harm to themselves that they don't really need to be doing on a day-out basis.
Yeah, like the chair shots of the head thing, they've pretty much eliminated, you know, and at least WWE and, like, TNA, pretty much. I mean, you don't see those. I mean, you saw one last year during Undertaker and Triple H, last time I saw one.
Yeah. And he got his hand up, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like, I don't know, what like that. No, the worst one after that was that chair shot homicide did to Rob Terry. You remember that one? But it was just like the day after Chris Kanyon died. You know?
Yeah.
Another guy that had concussion issues over. You know,
and the way Benoit used to take shots, man, that guy would be swinging at his head. I just remember, you know, Kane just drilling him with one. And the way he used to take those chair shots, he took them right to the back of his head. He would throw his arms up and duck his head. That chair always hit him right in the back of the head, each and every time.
Well, the worst one, I mean, at the time, was just an incredible visual and made the match awesome, but who knows how much damage it really did, and that's the one where he was doing the tope out of the ring. Chris Jericho just let him have it like a baseball shot.
Yeah, I was there. That was a ladder match at the Royal Rumble in New Orleans. I was there live, and I could hear it. I was up in the press box, and I could hear that all the way up there. I just remember those matches, like, I guess it was like 97 in ECW when, like, Balls Mahoney and the Sandman would do those chair shot matches. Remember those stupid things? where they would like just stick their head out and say, you know, here, hit me, and no, I just, I mean, and we're not stupid. You know, it's not going to be good for you. I mean, even back then, you know.
And then Mike Awesome and Tanaka were even worse at it. They were getting even harder than those guys were doing
that. Yeah, that one night stand match. That was a hell of a match. And you know, obviously, Mike Awesome isn't here anymore. So.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, didn't he hang himself or something?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did that.
He served for, you know, from the concussions. I mean, you know, hopefully now you won't see people doing stuff like that. You know, of course, you know that there's going to be dummies on the independent scene or backyard wrestlers who are doing it constantly. But hopefully, like, TNA and WWE will keep it up and keep encouraging them not to do stupid stuff like that. And then actually, like, if they have to pull them from a pay-per-view, you know?
The really sad thing is that's not going to be the last, you know, guy we hear about killing himself. I mean, there's a lot of those guys. I don't know how, but they're still walking around from the old ECW days. It's just a matter of time before we hear a story about Balls Mahoney or, you know, anybody who's wrestled New Jack or, you know, just, you know what I mean?
I heard a story about Balls Mahoney 2 weeks ago, took a chair shot and then threw up.
That's not good for you.
Yeah. And I'm sure the Extreme Rising will do a video of him going to the hospital and then use that in their next promo. So, whatever.
Yeah, make a big joke, yuck, yuck, out of it. Yeah. Yeah, more to come, unfortunately. Just my opinion.
Yeah, no, but it actually seems like it's actually slowed down, like, the past half a year.
Also, I was going to say, a lot of the credit to, you know, the stuff going on now with the, you know, with the brain stuff, you got to give credit to Chris Nowinski for bringing a lot of that to light, you know.
Yeah, just so guys will work harder and smarter as well. You don't have to do that.
I think he got, like, he didn't never have as many concussions, but I think he had, like, a really bad concussion and he couldn't wrestle anymore, right?
In Nowinski?
Yeah.
Yeah, he just had the symptoms like lasted like a long, long time. Or I can't remember exactly, but I think it gets to the point where you're just concussed, you know, for like weeks at a time or something.
It's hard to understand how it would feel like if you've never had one. So, you know, I can only guess.
Yeah.
And he started, you know, he started the Legacy Institute, which has done all the studies on brains and stuff. I know a lot of people, like, I guess Lance Storm is donating his brain or something like that.
Yeah.
Sounds weird, but... So.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has to take, like, some, like, little, like, I don't want to say IQ test, but he has to take, like, some kind of, like, a little test for it, like, every year.
Luckily, Lance has been smart enough to be safe pretty much his entire career, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not too many of those.
But I guess we talked a lot about the tragedy. I guess we could also talk about who Chris Benoit was before this point.
Sure.
And to me, like my first exposure to Chris Benoit was he didn't he have two stints, like two real quick stints in WCW.
No, he was in that NWA World Tag Team Title Tournament in '92, with you know, his partner was Biff Wellington, who actually died like the same weekend he did. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Wow, well, there's been like a few Biff Wellingtons. It's kind of hard to keep up with them.
But died the same exact weekend that Benoit, you know, did all that, and and they took on a. Pillman and Jushin Liger, it was a hell of a match. I remember that match on, like, a Clash of the Champions. Then he came in like, the beginning of '93 and had some matches, like, took Cold Scorpio and got it like that. And And he was still doing all the interviews. He never stayed around that long because he was always in Japan or something like that. So he really didn't come in full-time until 95. First time I ever saw him, I mean, when you first see him work, there's no doubt about who he's, who his influence was.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just his Dynamite Kid. I mean, he just works just like him, you know, with those snap suplexes, those short clotheslines, headbutts, and stuff like that. I mean, it's just like his Dynamite Kid in somebody else's body.
You know, when I think the first time I actually saw him might have been like a video for Jushin Liger coming to the U.S.
That's right.
And at the time, I'm looking at him like looking at Chris Benoit, and I'm thinking, I know that the British Bulldog had teamed with a Johnny Smith in Japan, and they were kind of like the new Bulldogs or whatever. I'm like, that's got to be this Johnny Smith guy, because this is how he looks, just like a Bulldog.
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, later you find out it's Chris Benoit.
Yeah, that was like in late 91. They showed like a few minutes of a match with Benoit and Liger when Liger was coming in to challenge Pillman. And, yeah, actually, I think it was Dynamite Kid and Johnny Smith that were teaming up as the British Bruisers.
Oh, okay.
First time I saw Benoit was ECW. And didn't even actually get to see him wrestle. It was just clips of him dumping Sabu on his head.
Oh, God.
And, just brutal. Then saw him, it was probably the Worlds Collide pay-per-view, which, by the way, faux pas on my part from last week, pardon me. Saw him there, and then got a lot of the juniors tapes from Japan, Skydiving J Tournament, Super J Tournament, you know, things like that, and really started taking notice of him. I got a bootleg copy of the World Wrestling Peace Festival. It was like
From LA.
Yeah. And he wrestled Alex Wright, if I'm not mistaken. And just wow, the guy was awesome and.
Isn't he the guy that I knew, even though I didn't see that much of him early on, you were always reading about him in the aftermath, so I know who he was when I finally saw him. Because I was reading about, like, Stampede and in Japan and stuff like that. So, he was one of those guys I know who he was when I finally saw him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I pretty much knew who he was. Like, that's why he kind of, like, stuck out when he, like, had those quick stints in WCW. And then, you know, you hear about him in Japan and in AAA, and then the next thing you know, he's, isn't he in a suit getting out of the limo and saying, this is where the big boys play?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then...
That first match he had with Eddie Guerrero, you want to remember that? Do you remember that powerbomb he gave Eddie Guerrero? It's like the damnedest powerbomb I've ever seen in my life. Jesus.
Yeah, he just killed him.
Yeah.
Not to be outdone by the choke slam the Big Show gave him.
That was awesome. That was the biggest choke slam I've ever seen.
Yeah, phenomenal. Yeah.
And then that's when he started to get to really show what he was capable of, because he finally started to have long matches and had such people, you know, he was working with Eddie and Dean and the Cruiserweights and the Lucha.
That's when they had an awesome mid card there in WCW with all those guys.
Yeah.
Guerrero, Malenko, Jericho, Ray, Ultimo Dragon, guys like that. That's one of the reasons I think Nitro got over so well, was because they had all those guys, you know, underneath having awesome matches.
Definitely.
Yeah. And that's when he really, you know, started to, you know, everyone really got to finally see how good he was at the time. And he was, like, one of my favorite guys from WCW. And I guess we gotta talk into the what his big storyline was, and that was basically he gets into a feud with Kevin Sullivan, who is the is he still married to Nancy when
I think
when
they were
they
still
turned?
Married. Yeah, they were still married because of the. It took a few, in a few months, you know, the whole thing became real and broke the marriage up.
Yeah, well, basically, he was doing an angle where he was basically, it was like he stole Nancy away from Kevin Sullivan on the TV, and it was pretty much going on in real life. It was kind of a Missy Hyatt, Eddie Gilbert, John Tatum thing.
Mm-hmm. If they were trying to, like, work the other guys, like, in bars and stuff. That was one of those things. One of those goofy things they did in WCW back then was try to work the people in the locker room for some unknown reason to think what they were doing was real. I don't know.
Yeah, they were always trying.
I wonder if this
they
was
were
supposed
doing.
To be. Say what?
Go ahead. I said they were always doing things to work the boys. I mean, just to make it real to them. I don't understand why, but anyway.
Yeah. I mean, whatever. But anyway, I wonder if this was, like, supposed to be, I think he was just moved in here because Pillman left. Isn't that right? Do you remember Pillman?
I would imagine because it's, he was part of the Horsemen when Pillman was still there, wasn't he?
Yeah, he and Pillman and Flair and Narn were the Horsemen.
Yeah, so I would imagine it was pretty much his, he took Pillman's spot after that.
Yeah, because I remember, you know, they did the, of course, the other thing, you know, the other work they did with the Booker Man stuff, and and he left and then got Eric to give him an actual release so he could sell this angle, and then he went to WWF or something like that. And they started in, he and Sullivan feuded for... Gosh, it was like the whole year they feuded, but I just remember the match in the bathroom at the Great American Bash.
Yeah.
That match was awesome.
They hit each other so hard throughout the whole match.
And there was two guys that could do that, that wouldn't mind getting a hit hard, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
It looked like they were like, they made the animosity look real, you know? Like, you're really thinking, like, you're actually thinking it actually is turning into a shoot, you know? It was so intense. And
when like, Sullivan was out there, when he faced, like, job guys, he really was beating the shit out of them. So I don't doubt that they were, you know, like, really beating the shit out of one another. And Benoit, he can, you know, he's one of those guys, he could take anything anybody dishes out. He was just a, you know, a tough guy back then. You know.
Yeah, well, I mean, he came from Japan. I mean, he came from the dojo, so, I mean, he knows. You take it
probably,
and you give it right back.
And aside from the match, the other thing that came out.
I tell you,
there's a lady! There's a lady in the men's bathroom! Look at that! Kay is a woman in the men's gown right here in Baltimore!
You're awful.
You're horrible for playing that clip on the show.
Give me an excuse to play it. Sorry.
But and that feud really was kind of like even like up Chris Benoit up higher up. You know, this got him to like the events or right below the main events at this time in WCW. So it was a feud for him. You know, and of course, and this is where he you know gets involved with Nancy and stuff, and then. You know, not that much longer, you know, they had to change and I guess they put Sullivan back in charge and that's when they all decided to walk out on the company and go to WWE.
Yeah, this was, I don't know, you just think back about this whole storyline, it's just how different things would be if that never happened, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just let all of them walk. Yeah, all those guys under that's such stupidity. You know, I've got three of the greatest workers in my office in Perry Saturn, and we're just gonna let them go.
I was excited because they had done everything they could in WCW, and I was excited to see them go WWF. And, you know, there's so many matches that they could have with guys over there. I was really excited when they made the jump.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just crazy seeing them in, like, the front row, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, I guess that whole weekend, there was a weekend that it was a sold-out pay-per-view.
And they made him the champion. They made him the champion, and he still walked away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that's when Russo got demoted because he wanted Jake Abbott to win the world title. They said, okay, something's wrong with this guy. And I don't know, Tank Abbott's a tough guy, but him being the world champion, he was like a homeless person. Sorry. you know, then I think it was Bret Hart was supposed to defend the title. He got a concussion. He had the Goldberg concussions he never came back from. Mm-hmm. And Benoit was supposed to face Jeff Jarrett, and Jarrett had a concussion. And so they moved Benoit in there with Sid. And mm-hmm. Benoit won it. But the whole idea was they were going to put it on Benoit, but then they were going to put it back on Sid and then put it back on Goldberg when he came back, you know, as the big baby face. And I guess they didn't think they could get it. And it was obviously done to, just to pacify him for that one day. And they thought giving him the world title was going to pacify him for that one day. But he said he sent the other – he was supposed to defend the title he's supposed to be, I think, working like three matches the next night or something, some kind of a gimmick. And they sent all the other guys home, I think, was Guerrero, Malenko, and Saturn. I think Douglas and Shane Douglas and Conan were in there somewhere, too. And they sent them home. And they said, well, if they're leaving, then I'm leaving. And he offered to drop the belt right there, and they said, no, just go ahead and leave. So that's their own stupid fucking fault. And they left. And it was like 2 weeks later, maybe, they showed up in the front row of Raw.
Yeah.
Didn't Malenko on that pay-per-view have a match where that he was in a match, some kind of like a thing where he was supposed to, like, whoever left the ring first was the loser, and for some reason he just went outside the ring, like, forgot what the rules were?
It was supposed to be like some kind of an amateur rules match or something stupid. With Billy Kidman, I think amateur rules, and I think of Billy Kidman. And they were going back and forth, and Malenko just left the ring and lost the match. What a horrible time at WCW, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It reminds me of TNA up until about 3 months ago. I wonder what the connection is.
WCW was going downhill before Vince Russo got there.
True.
They were, but he sped up to death, I think, in my opinion, anyway.
You know, for the first couple of months that he got there, they had some pretty entertaining television. And then he started to think, I guess. I don't know what the deal was, but television was okay there for the first few months.
Yes, because WCW was so bad, like, right before that any change, I think, was a good one.
That's true.
He's good. Yeah. He's good at restarting everything. It's just after like 2 weeks, he just doesn't know where to go.
Yeah, anybody can write the beginning of the story. The compelling middle and ending is always hard to get.
And you probably need to think about those before you write the first part.
Right. That's what you should do. You should have a finished word
or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know where they're going. That one last week, that was terrible. And it was funny because, you know, people saying, oh, they're not going to do anything in WWF. And it was like a week later in Dallas, they had like this awesome 10-man tag or something with Rock and Cactus Jack and Rikishi and Too Cool against DX and I think it was Benoit, Malenko, and Saturn. And it got like 8-point rating or something like that.
Yeah, it was an awesome match.
Yeah.
Now, he wrestled Triple H like that following SmackDown, right?
No, it was before that because they came in as babyface with Cactus Jack. And,
yeah.
Remember they did the deal and they were going to have the matches on SmackDown, like, to get contracts, and I think it was supposed to be
Slater lost, and then Eddie and Dean were supposed to win.
But he
and then
that's
an Eddie
his shoulder.
Elbow.
Yeah, he dislocated his elbow. He did that frog splash, and he was holding his arm, looked horrible. And
they caught the audible and had the Outlaws win.
Yeah, and then Triple H beat Benoit, so they were kind of out of there. And then they came back the next week, and it was a promo with Cactus and Triple H, and Cactus was he brought the Radicals were the name. They brought him to the ring, and I can't remember exactly what they were explaining. Said thanks for the opportunity and stuff, and Triple H came out and said, you guys need to show a little gratitude to the man that gave you your contract, and then they turned on Cactus Jack, which I thought was pretty awesome.
Yeah. The thing that really stuck out to me about Chris Benoit, why I really enjoyed watching Chris Benoit, is because, you know, he was never the great promo guy, but the dude could project his body language like no other, because we got a guy who's, 5'6" or something. I mean, he was ridiculously short. You know, yeah, he's jacked up a muscular, but when this little short dude walked to the ring, he walked to the ring like he could beat the shit out of every single person on the roster, including the Big Show, including Kane. I mean, he just projected himself out to be just the baddest dude in the world when he walked to the ring.
He was great at wrestling with anybody of any size, and you could believe that he beat anybody.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, he was...
The closest thing to him now is Daniel Bryan.
He's also one of those guys that, I put him in that class like Shawn Michaels or Ric Flair or Steamboat, as a guy that was consistently able to make the other person look better than they were.
Yeah. That's what I dug about the guy. I mean, he was so good in the ring. It didn't matter his size. It didn't matter who he was facing. He left everything in the ring. And he made you believe that what you were watching was 100% legit.
Yeah.
And that is so missing from everything today. When he was in the ring, you thought you were watching a fight.
And for his size, he was like one of the better brawlers you'd find in the business.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would dish it out, but he wasn't afraid to take it either, by any means.
I remember. Do you remember when they gave him those fake teeth? You know how he was missing those teeth, and then like there was like a week or two where he was coming to the ring and he had all his teeth, and then it just didn't work. That was part of his like, or is those missing teeth.
Yeah.
Mick Foley.
Well, he had the one that was on the side. He was missing that one. It was on the left side of his mouth, right?
Yeah.
Benoit, they never gave Benoit any teeth.
Yeah, dude. There was a week or two where he came out and he had like a, I don't know what you call him, but he did not have the big gap.
You're thinking of Dude Love when Steve Austin jerked
him out. No, dude. I'm talking about Chris Benoit.
Who are you going to believe, Craig?
I don't know what to believe right now, to be honest with you. I can't even believe
they never gave Chris Benoit any teeth. It was Foley in 98. I'm right.
I would imagine cosmetically they would want him to have a denture. But
they put out Toothless Aggression t-shirts.
Whoever it is that's always posting YouTube videos about should we talk about, post a video of Chris Benoit walking to the ring with his teeth.
And you will be flabbergasted when there's a failure of people to say that you're right.
I am right.
I'm right, you are wrong.
You're wrong this time.
I'm just glad it's not me this time.
Listeners, who do you believe? You believe Ed or me?
Well, I have a tendency to believe Contreras because he's a wrestling dictionary.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Well, sometimes they're wrong.
You don't remember
too.
When Steve Austin just dude loves teeth out of his mouth and stomped on him?
See, I remember that.
I remember that. But he had like all his teeth. Chris Benoit had a tooth. It was one tooth. They gave him a tooth.
Did not give him a tooth. Next, continue with the. Let's go through something else. No.
Well, you derailed the whole show here. But he had some awesome. He had like awesome matches with Triple H, and his matches with Kurt Angle were awesome. His one at WrestleMania, that's probably my favorite one, where they're doing like a lot of the amateur wrestling, and that was just
that
a fantastic match.
They had the best one, and maybe the best match I saw him in, like in his entire WWF run, and maybe. I mean, and maybe for me, his entire career, it's the match he had with Kurt Angle to the Royal Rumble, I think in 1992. I mean, in 2002. Or 2003.
And the cage match on Raw.
Oh, where Kurt Angle did the moonsault?
Yes.
They both jumped off the top of that damn cage.
That's true.
I remember that match at the Royal Rumble just because it was in Boston, and it was like one of the best matches I had ever seen. And then afterwards, like, the Boston fans gave him a standing ovation even though he lost.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing he was good at. He knew how to get a standing ovation after a loss.
Yeah, I mean, losing never hurt him. He could lose, like, you know, with no gimmicks or no, you know, run-ins or bullshit. And it really didn't hurt him.
It's because he had... People had respect for him because he knew what he was doing in the ring, and he projected that. And how could you not respect a guy that was that good in the ring? That's why the fans love Daniel Bryan now.
Yep.
Doesn't matter what he does. It doesn't matter how many times he loses. He's that good.
I remember there was like a long period of time where it's like every week it was a debate on who was the best wrestler. It was like, 1 week it was Chris Benoit, 1 week it was Kurt Angle, and then the next week it was Eddie Guerrero, and they would just switch back and forth for like months.
Yeah, I remember there was they had the big, maybe one of the last times the tag team titles really meant anything was when they were doing the big three-way feud with, it was Edge and Rey Mysterio against Kurt Angle and Benoit and Eddie and Chavo Guerrero. I thought it was always weird Chavo was in there because he didn't seem like he fit in that group.
But it worked.
But I remember they had the finals that when they did the World Tag Team Title Tournament, and they had like a 5-star match with Edge and Ray against Benoit and Kurt Angle.
That's a lot of good workers in one ring.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. One of my favorite matches, it was... I actually, Buddy Wayne had lent me this videotape, and he said, whatever you do, don't go home and copy this, Craig, because Jim Cornette had given it to him. Jim Cornette had sent him the tape of the Brian Pillman Memorial Show. And so Buddy lent it to me, and of course I came home and immediately copied it. there's no commentary on the thing. It's just the video cameras before commentary on top of it, and it's Steven Regal, not William, Steven Regal against Chris Benoit, and they beat the stuffings out of each other. Just
that's the match that got Regal's job back, right?
Yeah,
or spot back in WWF.
And I went to look for it today, and it's actually on YouTube right now. So
it's on the Benoit DVD.
It is on the that's right. It is on the Benoit DVD. Yeah, that match is so good.
It's Todd Grisham doing commentary, I think.
Oh gosh. Well, that just took the match down a mark.
I think it was also on there that like Benoit against like Jushin Liger, and Todd Grisham was doing commentary. And how did Benoit to get to the United States? He said he. We want a plane or something like that. I don't know. Something stupid.
There needs to be like commentary between Benoit and Eddie, and they're just kind of like basically rolling their eyes at him the whole time.
Yeah.
But that's different J Cup, I remember, you know, I heard all the things about the Super J Cup, and I remember I went to one of the Texas Wrestling Alliance shows, and on the way out they had a I guess somebody was selling like just a little fan of videos of cassette tapes. And I was like, I just asked, do you got the Super J Cup, the one that Benoit won? And they're like, yeah. So they gave it to me, and that was like so incredible. I mean, just there was so much awesome talent on that show. And
that's the one with Ray and Psychosis.
No.
Yes. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
1995, I think.
They weren't in that one.
Beat Jericho with a tombstone off like the second rope or something?
No, you're thinking about like the next one.
Oh, okay.
It might have been 94.
I'm talking about the one where Benoit won, where Sasuke was the one that was kind of like the star of the show. Benoit, he wrestled Eddie as Black Tiger, and there's a spot where like Eddie jumps on the top rope and almost actually loses it. I mean, he was just on the verge, and Benoit actually saved him. And then they go into like the Hernan Carrera spot, but it was an awesome, awesome match. And then he had the awesome match with the great Sasuke, and
that was a
fantastic, fantastic show.
Jacob 94, you had him. Let me see here. You had him. For some reason, the first match was in his bracket. Was Black Tiger against Taka. Quarterfinals, Wild Pegasus, Black Tiger. He then wrestled Gato, whatever you want to call him, and Wild Pegasus and the Great Sasuke in the main event. He had Sasuke beating El Samurai, Sasuke beating Jushin Liger, and then losing to Benoit in the main event. And this is the one where Sasuke cracked his skull legit, or was that the year after?
That was the one where he cracked his skull.
Yeah, anyway.
And him, I think Benoit and Sasuke had buys in the first round.
Yes, yeah, the round one, they went. The guys that got the buy were Pegasus, Gato, Liger, and Sasuke. They automatically went to the quarterfinals.
Yeah, the one I saw was 95. That was the next year. It had the Rey Mysterio Psychosis match.
Yeah.
I think Dave Meltzer gave like 5 stars to it or something like that.
They weren't even in the tournament. It was like a special attraction match. And the fans were so appreciative, they were actually throwing money into the
ring. That's the quietest match I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Quietest crowd I've ever seen. I thought I was watching on YouTube, and I thought like something's wrong with the audio here. I got mute on or something. Couldn't hear anything.
Yeah, in 95, it was Lionheart against Wild Pegasus, and Benoit beat him. He then went on to wrestle Gato, and then the finals of that one was Liger and Gato. And there's an awesome match with Liger and Ultimo Dragon from 95. Anyway.
Go ahead.
Like really where I think that's where he was at his best. And also in WWF in like 2000, 2001, 2002.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Just, I'm reminiscing about these J-Cups. I shouldn't do this. I should get off this wiki page. Sorry, I'm distracted.
It's kind of like when you hear David Richards thinking about retiring, it's probably a good idea because the guys who pattern themselves after the dynamic kid, including himself, don't seem to. They're just not right in the head by the end.
Well, that's probably another story for another time, but yeah, you're probably right.
People don't want them to end up like the others ended up, I guess, you know?
Who would have thought that Benoit would have ended up worse than Dynamite? Because, I mean, you just hear the stories about how miserable he is and just the crazy stories about him, like, terrorizing his wife and stuff.
He pulled an unloaded gun on his wife. He's doing a rib, yeah. I guess. I don't know. That was a mean person.
Yeah, if you read his book, he really comes off as a pretty mean person.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
I'll talk about something real quick that's kind of, I don't know, makes me shake my head and just, I don't know, that thing's kind of stupid. Or the people that, like, want him to be recognized, like, say his name or something, like on TV or on DVDs and stuff like that.
Sure.
I don't blame WWF or Vince for the way they've handled all this. Like, you know, as the history of Chris Benoit and the company, you know, recognizing it or not recognizing it, I really don't blame them. I mean, they're a public company. They can be. You guys know what I'm. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can't blame them for, like, wanting to erase them from the history books, but it's like, how do you erase WrestleMania 20?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it was on the anthology. Maybe that came out after Benoit death or something, and it was like, I think they just listed the main event as, like, a triple threat match or something for the title, but listed no names or something like that.
I understand it. I think it's a little extreme, but at the same time, the people who are, like, so against it, you know, that think you should be, you know, I think it's, I kind of feel the same way. I mean, it's just two extremes that I think that are just, I think their views are just too extreme. You know, I mean, I can understand them not talking about him on a daily basis, but, you know, occasionally his name would have to come up, and it should come up, you know, and, you know, just for, like, you know, rare cases, but, you know, it should happen, but, you know, they're not going to do it. And then the people who they want, like, every single thing remembered, it's like, I can understand why they don't want to bring up his name. You know, it's just, it doesn't bring up any good news or anything, you know what I mean?
Like,
so it's
like the idiots,
I see both sides, I just think they're a little extreme.
Like, the idiots that want him to go, they say he needs to go in the Hall of Fame. No, you can't put him in the Hall of Fame, like WWF Hall of Fame.
Agreed.
Yeah, you absolutely cannot do that. I mean, that can never happen. And I also thought it was, but I also at the same time thought that it was bullshit when they wanted to take, or there was the thing about him being kicked out of the Observer Hall of Fame because he was put in that Hall of Fame before the stuff happened and, you know, put in there by his peers. And then people wanted him to be voted out because of what happened. Well, I'm sorry. I mean, maybe he had that happen before he was put in there. I can understand him never being in there, but he was already in there. You know,
yeah,
so it's like, I thought that was pretty wrong. And then, you know, it's like the WWE Hall of Fame, you know, there's a lot of, it's more than just you're in ring. It's like a lot of other stuff. And I can understand why they wouldn't want, you know, to do it. But, you know, Dana's Hall of Fame is, you know, basically the criteria is like, you know what I mean? He qualifies as a Hall of Famer for that Hall of Fame. He was put in there. He should stay in there.
And the Hall of Fame in WWF is more about the Hall of Fame, you know, the Hall of Fame weekend or the, you know, the whole actual Hall of Fame event. And you can't discuss Benoit in positive terms. It's something like that. You just can't do it.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with him staying in the Observer Hall of Fame. If he's already in there before this happens, I got no problem with him staying in there. You know, let's just forget about this, you know?
It's not like you can sweep his in-ring stuff under the carpet, man.
Yeah.
You just can't. I mean, the influence on guys of today, I mean, you go into any indie locker room and you're going to find a guy who has been influenced by Benoit. Plain and simple.
Either Benoit or Shawn Michaels, or those are two of the main guys that influence. I mean, for younger guys.
Yeah. And, you know, it's to sweep it under the rug. I understand why they want to do that. I get that. But at the same time, what he did in the ring, and I still kind of stand by this thing where, you know, he wasn't right in the head. And so from there, I don't want to say you excuse what he did, because that's not the right language to use with that. But there was something wrong with the man, and he snapped, and he did something horrible. Before that, you know, I know it's hard to look past what your last memory of him is, but the stuff he did in the ring was revolutionary and amazing.
Well, like when we see it, like you hear, like a lot of people say, like you can't, they don't want him brought up, that they agree that he should be erased, and like you can't be a fan, you can't say anything good about him.
Yeah.
You know, and I can kind of understand people wanting to say that, but at the same time, that doesn't change the past. It doesn't change the past that, you know, however old I was, being a grown-ass man watching that triple threat match, and, you know, in pretty much knowing he was supposed to win, but I'm still jumping out of my seat, standing, screaming at the top of my lungs at the TV, screaming at Hunter to fucking tap. You know what I mean? It doesn't change that. That still happened. You know what I mean? I can't take back that, you know, I enjoyed Chris Benoit. I can't take back that, you know, he's probably the greatest wrestler I've ever seen in my life. That doesn't change that. I mean, it's, you know.
How do you erase that memory of him and Eddie hugging in the ring? How do you erase that?
Yeah, I mean, it's more difficult now, not so much because of what he did, but because both guys are gone.
Right.
I guess, you know, and that was a big moment. You know, we had the Vanilla Midgets in there in the center of the ring in the main event of WrestleMania.
That was like the greatest WrestleMania moment of all time in my book.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, I mean, it was my two favorite wrestlers who were never supposed to get there. I mean, let alone being in the WWE, let alone being the two main events, let alone being the two world champions at the end of WrestleMania. I mean, that moment wasn't supposed to happen. That was a special moment.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about, you know, we have no problem. I mean, I don't think we've had any problem. You know, we do a lot of history, you know, topics here. I mean, we never had any problem giving you credit for, like, great matches or anything like that, I don't think. I mean, I don't feel bad about it. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm supposed to. If somebody doesn't like it, then, well, that's their hang-up. That's not really mine. So, sorry.
Right. I mean, I'll say this. Rodney is not going to listen to the show today. And he said he would not listen to the show. You know what? That's cool. If he doesn't want to listen, and that's fine. And that's the way he deals with this. And I'm totally respectful of that. People deal with stuff in a different way, in different ways. And I get why some people, you know, found out what the topic of our show is today and said, I'm skipping this one. I get that. You know, people deal with stuff different ways.
I do that every week with a show on the site, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, you can't tell a person what to like and what not to like, and you can't tell a person how to deal with something because you deal with it a different way. You just can't.
There's no right, there's no wrong.
You know, what are you going to do? And I think we're kind of all on the same page, you know?
That's when this crap gets too real. I don't like that.
Exactly. I don't like it when my wrestling gets real.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, it's also like, it's, you know, I think it's something that, you know, needs to be talked about every once in a while. I mean, it's a big part of wrestling. It changes a lot of things.
It was the biggest tragedy that's ever happened.
The biggest black eye, biggest tragedy. I mean, it's there whether we like it or not, and you know what I mean? I mean, you know, I wish to God it never happened, but unfortunately it did, and, you know, the wrestling world moves on, and it won't be the last, And, you know, hopefully there'll be a little further between. Hopefully, like the stuff they're doing today will keep, you know, so hope make it so you don't hear as many people committing suicide or doing crazy stuff, you know, as often as we've had. So, you know, we'll just have to see what happens. And, you know, I mean, it's fucked up what he did. And, you know, for what he did, he kind of, like, deserves to burn in hell. But like I said earlier, that doesn't change how I felt about him at other times, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, if I was, like, Brian knew him, but, you know, it didn't affect me the way that it would affect Brian because, you know, I didn't know the guy. I never met the guy before in my life, so. To some people, it might be difficult for others to, like, talk so good about him. And, I don't know, it's weird.
Yeah, it's weird when your heroes screw up. You know?
And unfortunately, it seems like every wrestling hero I've ever had has been screwed up in one way or another.
Yeah,
well, look at the business you're following. It's a screwed up business.
I mean, Jesus Christ, the Von Erichs, Eddie, Chris, the Wall, I mean, it's just Brody. It's just like one track. I just have been dealing with all. It's like all my favorite wrestlers have some kind of unfortunate tragedy, and it's like I kind of get scared for Daniel Bryan.
and he might be the most normal guy ever. You know, and he's in this.
He doesn't eat meat, Craig. He's not normal.
He's as for every normal cat you meet in the world of professional wrestling, there's like, you know, 100 wacky dudes and 300 wacky fans. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We follow a weird quote unquote sport. It's no different. Buddy Wayne told me when we were on a road trip back, it's sex, drugs, and rock and roll without the rock and roll. I said, okay. And he got out pretty unscathed. I mean, back surgeries and, you know, hearts, you know, open heart surgery at the age of 40, you know, he got off light.
Yes, it's just crazy business.
Well, hey, yeah. If we got anything out of this whole mess, at least we got the woman with the mouth to get a chuckle at. You remember her?
Yep. I remember. I was pretty much all
the
figures that Brian was on.
I guess Joe had how awful those fucking news shows are. Jesus, those shows suck. I wouldn't want to be on one of those shows. You get like 2 minutes to say something.
I just like how like Dave would be freaking out because, you know, Dave's trying to give like 100,000 facts real quick,
yeah.
And he couldn't do it. But Brian, you know, Brian was able to get the, like, he was able to give the kind of answers they wanted.
Oh, and the old guy in the, like, it was like one of the first days on that Nancy Grace show and said, do you think he was despondent about being demoted from the Four Horsemen to ECW or something like that. Some stupid question like that. God, that was embarrassing to watch.
I just remember Finley getting pissed off at Brian. He's like, how does he know he's willing to talk to him? And it's like,
well, it's on the website. They were talking about the drug policy. He says, how do they know? He's not in a locker room. He says, well, the policy's on your website.
Well, he also, like, mentioned, like, he was saying, that he, how would he know him? He doesn't know him, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe. I hate that talk. You know, what does he know? He's never been in a locker room of, kind of like Al Snow or somebody.
Yeah. Well.
And then he had Mark Merrow with his
list.
His very
the
impressive
guy with the
list that he had to have made more impressive.
Yeah, he had to have people in there that didn't have nothing to do with that. Chrisland didn't cause their deaths or anything like that. Gosh. And I remember Paul Collette
he hurt himself so much because of that, but it's because it's like, you know, it's kind of hard to take him serious.
Yeah, he shows up to all these shows. He says, here's my list. I got the list with me. He's the dude with the list.
Yeah.
Have you ever mentioned to him that we changed the name of the show, Craig?
Oh, yeah, well, I wanted to change the name of the show anyway, because the drunk cast didn't really, it didn't really speak to wrestling fans. And not to mention, I was, you know, having good conversations with Mark Marrow over the internet, and I asked him to come on the show. And when you're talking to a man of God, which he is, and, you know, he basically preaches all over, well, Florida. And you're asking him to come on a show, and you're trying to sell the show to not just a godly man, but any man in general. And they ask you what the name of the show is, and you say the Drunk Cast. You lose a little bit of credibility there. And not to mention, I was on the show, and I just wanted to kind of, you know, I think it's a better change myself. And
yeah,
next week, I'm sure. Next week, I'm sure you'll drag it back to the Drunk Cast when you're in Las Vegas. And that's fine.
Yeah. We still ain't had him on.
What? Yeah, we haven't had him on. And, and that's partially my fault. And, well, a lot of the guests that I try to get is my fault. Anyway,
you need to get Hacks on Jim Duggan because we could do a way better interview than that.
Well, maybe I'll ask him again.
And then we also got to get Matt Hardy on. We can have a better interview than him, too. You need to get to work, Craig.
Man, I've been trying. People have been blowing me off right and left, and I got the 29th sounds great. I'll be on your show the 29th. Guess what today is? Today's the 29th, and the guest that I was trying to get for the 29th has not emailed me back. And it was a good guest, too. Anyway.
Well, keep trying. But we got 7 minutes to go here. Let me drop the plug. Everyone check out angrymarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at angrymarks.com along with a lot of other shows. So everyone check out angrymarks.com.
So I guess in wrapping up our little topic for the day, when I first threw this out, I said, let's call the show Chris Benoit, .. the wrestler. I don't want to think about what he did. I don't want to think about any of that. I have a great appreciation for his in-ring ability. I had a great appreciation for his work ethic. He was just a machine in the ring, and that's what I would like to have him known for. It's never going to be that way, and that was his choice, but I hope we did okay. I hope our listeners understand where we're coming from, because I don't want to glorify that man by the last 24 hours of his life. Everything before that and all the stuff he did in the ring, that's what was amazing.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty much. You got any final thoughts on the subject of Trent?
No, I just think Craig pretty much summed it up. Plus, I can't think of anything.
I know you're still trying to find a picture of him with his tube fin. I'll tell you, it's out there. Somebody will find it.
Only if it's Photoshopped.
Oh,
goodness. Anyway, as far as next week, since I will be in Vegas on Friday, there won't be a show. I'm actually looking about doing the show on the 4th of July itself. which I'm sure Craig will probably be busy for sure. And
if you do it early in the day, I'm on board. Okay.
I don't know. It might be later, but anyway, just in case both of you guys are gone, I got the other former co-host lined up, so he should be making an appearance. And it'll actually be the 4th year anniversary. So the very first show was on the 4th of July, and that's when me and Peach and Clitz were drunk and did a show. And I think that actually didn't last too long, but. Yeah, so we should be doing something on Wednesday, and then I'm not sure what's going on in Vegas, but we'll have plenty of stories going on after Vegas for sure. And so there'll be plenty of Vegas talk coming up. So, and also I gotta say, Brian Alvarez is just last night proved himself to be a fucking idiot, because He's talking about, you know, I had Granny trolling for me of asking him about why he hasn't pitched in for the suite like the majority of the other people going to Vegas have, but Brian hasn't. And then Brian's response is, I don't know what's going on. I have no idea of anything.
Oh, he doesn't.
Well, how does he not know what happened when I send him the itinerary once to twice a week? He's actually put it, not even in the update, but made his own page. He actually read a shout out that had everything in it, but yet he has no clue about what's going on. It's like, Brian, this convention is named after your freaking website. There are people coming from all over the freaking world to meet you. Put a little fucking effort into it, at least. You know what I mean? It's like, have an idea of where the fuck you're going to meet people. You know, it's like they get frustrated. I'm not even having to do all the work, and I don't get freaking paid.
Ed, welcome to my world.
But poor Whitney has to even deal with it even worse than you. I mean,
I get that. Don't try to make plans with the man. Don't try to book anything past tomorrow. When he's ready to go and he's got a plan, that's him. Anybody else has plans? Doesn't matter. I have never, ever been to an event on time with that man. Ever. It's gotten to the point where I will buy the tickets to a show and then I will give him the tickets long before the show. Actually, I give them to Whitney. And then I will go and sit and I will catch all the matches, and then two matches in, here comes strolling in. Every single time. I've just learned my lesson. You let the guy do what he does, and you just go, oh, well, that's Brian. So that, yeah, you can get upset. You can throw a fit. You can kick, scream, and jump up and down. It ain't going to change him.
Oh, you know why? In the pool.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Throw him in the pool and hold his head in the water, because you know he's afraid of the water.
He is afraid of the water.
Yeah. I get everybody. We'll just dogpile his ass in the pool.
Well, I'd video it. I'd like to see that.
And then we'll do it to Dave.
I don't want to see that. I like Dave.
But yeah, Vegas would be an awesome time. We got plenty of stuff lined up in spite of Brian Alvarez. I mean, as soon as I get in Thursday morning, we're going to a new buffet at the Cosmopolitan called The Wicked Something. And then we're going to play, after that, we're going to go play Mini Kiss Golf.
Sweet.
Which would be awesome. And then,
Mike McCready was just there, a couple weeks ago. Mike McCready's a guitar player for Pearl Jam. He posts stuff on his Facebook page. And he was in Vegas, and there he is with the singer just standing out front, taking pictures, had the biggest grin on his face I've ever seen, and it was like, okay, that's cool. Kiss mini golf.
Yeah, so there's going to be some really cool stuff and cool pictures coming out of that. And then we got our dinner at Sama's, and then a bunch of us are going to go see the Cirque du Soleil show Ka at MGM, and then I think Anchor and one other guy are going to go see Beatles Love. And so we got lined up for Thursday. Friday, If you're going to the expo at 11 and 1 o'clock, you can watch my faggot ex co-host get raped in the Grappler's Quest or the whatever it is. And then we have our big dinner at one of the embassies, and that should be awesome. And then we have a suite at my place, of course. And then the Saturday we're having a pool barbecue party from, like, I guess maybe 10 to 12. Before the UFC show, so we can get our grub on and get a little raise, and like I say, Joe Bryan in the pool, and that should be fun. And then, of course, after the UFC, we always hit Dick's and basically take over the patio, so that's always a crazy, crazy time. And hopefully, I'm a little worried, though, because some of the guys are going a little earlier this year, so they could be there on the 4th. And last year, it was very creepy and weird because the Junior Horseman was looking at Rodney and just was praising and loving Rodney, and just it looked like he wanted to rape Rodney, and we were very worried about Rodney's safety. And Rodney's going to have like a whole day with Junior Horseman with not that many people around, so I'm kind of worried that Rodney might not be there by the time I get there. You know, Alex Goff might be the token black of the group, you know, if Horseman loses control. So hopefully that won't happen. but Vegas is going to be awesome. And one of these years, you got to get your ass to Vegas, Craig.
I know. I haven't been in like 15 years.
Well, it's time for you to go. You got a whole week to plan, Craig. Just buy a ticket and go.
Yeah.
Chuck Tick will buy the ticket for you. He's got money.
No. First off, I would have to get the crowbar out to pry his wallet open.
I just remember one time, and this is like a few years ago.
He gets to Vegas
and he's bitching. Okay, first off, he doesn't carry cash. And I understand that nowadays, you know, you carry a debit card, people don't really carry cash, but I've always been taught that if you have some cash, you keep it in your pocket or your wallet because of shit that could happen. And the dude gets to town, gets on a taxi, and he's freaked out because he can't use his card in the taxi.
Yeah.
It's like,
see, that would be preparing, and he doesn't like to do that.
Yeah. I remember the very first convention, he was just going to go in shorts and a T-shirt and look pretty stupid. And Brian Prince was like, no, you got to wear pants, you know, and kind of giving him pointers, you know, because, you know, because Brian needed them. So anyway, so he doesn't have no pants, dude. So he only brought like one set of clothes or one chain. So Brian Prince gave him some pants, but, you know, Brian's a little midget, so these pants are pretty big. And Brian Prince didn't have a belt that would fit Brian. So basically, I got the plastic clip off of my phone, and basically he put it through two of the belt loops, and my phone clip basically kept his pants from falling, so he looked somewhat professional at the UFC show. And I think it was like his first one going on press row. So,
my little buddy.
Yeah, that's your little buddy, Craig.
Yeah, I know. All right, let's end the show. I got stuff to do.
What do you have to do?
I've got stuff to do. Let's go. Don't make me hang up on you like last week.
It only takes me a minute to find this damn theme song. There's so much shit on it. Okay, here it is.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You want to find out how good you are? You're looking at the mountain shit. Let's go hook him up. I'm gonna dog you and kill
tonight.